In a universe that almost is, just out of reach beyond the edge of reality, mysterious forces underlie the fabric of existence. Energemetra 6, the very energy of creation, serves as both the elixir of life and the arsenal of destruction for its human and not-so-human denizens.
Crushing darkness, whose source they cannot fathom, grips the cosmos and its people. In anguish, they dream of the long-foretold bright star.
Join us as we embark on an epic journey, exploring the universe of Energemetra 6.
This is the Energemetra 6 podcast. This is episode 20, and we are live. Welcome, everybody.
Hey there.
Thank you, Mel, for being here. We've got oldest and fourth this time for reading a couple of our parts today. And before we get to it, let's go ahead and hit value for value. The Energemetra 6 podcast operates on a value-for-value model. That means that we hope if we provide some value to you in your life, that you'll return that to us in whatever way you can manage. If you're interested, head over to e6universe.com and sign up for our email list to get our free ebooks, and hopefully buy a physical book or some merch while you're there. Or if all you can manage right now is to leave us a good review somewhere, 5 stars or some kind of positive rating, that's more than appreciated. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for being here. And we are in the middle of From the Void, the story in the book From the Void. And I think you had it marked for us, Mel. So with no further ado, I guess,
jump on in. Okay. In that moment, all of Rachel's resentment and anger toward her father boiled up, completely unbidden and unexpected. Here he was, willing to sacrifice a little boy on the off chance that it might lead Delastus Raylan back to the colony. All he cared about was the idea of other people. He didn't really care about the people around him. What about her and John? Why did they always have to take a back seat to his other responsibilities? Suddenly, this boy she had never met, this Terran, became a representation for Rachel of all the ways her dad had failed her. He was a precious, innocent human being, and he was going to die because her dad wouldn't save him. Rachel's anger flamed hot as Paul's jaw worked, trying to get out words she knew he didn't want to say. And she nearly cried out. Not because of that anger, but because she saw the other side of his decision as well. She saw how the sacrifices he had made and the decisions that cost others' lives had cut him so deeply. And though she was still angry and hurt, she loved her dad. She wouldn't let her selfishness get in the way of that. What about a spacesuit? She broke in, feeling desperation clawing at her, before her dad could speak and damn himself in his own eyes for the sake of the colony. He turned his head to her, frowning.
What, Rach?
Does he have a spacesuit? We can pull Terran in. He doesn't have to drop his ship in at all. A spacesuit wouldn't be as bad as a whole ship, right? A second later, very quietly, she added, You can't do it, Dad. You can't. She knew her eyes were pleading with him. She felt it from the bottom of her heart. If her dad turned this boy away, he would never be the same. And she saw Paul nod, first reluctantly, then more firmly, with his own relief.
Wayne, if you can get him in a suit and out from the ship, I'll pull him through to us.
Paul hesitated, then added,
And you, too.
Galton laughed darkly, but he never even hesitated.
I'm already dead, Paul. Save Taryn.
He disappeared from the viewer without another word, and Paul's mouth tightened.
Where are they, Dad?
John seemed befuddled. He'd obviously been doing his own exploration, trying to follow the Energemetrix waves back to their source, Galton's vessel, without success. The communication signal was simply appearing in the void before them, and their own communication signal, while it didn't seem to disappear, was weakened far more than it should have been for the distance at which they were operating. Paul shook his head.
I don't understand this any better than you do, son. I just know we can reach him.
It was a very long few minutes before Galton's face reappeared, but the three spent the time mostly in silence as their tension mounted. Finally, Galton poked his head back in front of the camera to demand,
Are you sure about this? Are you sure you can get him?
Paul nodded without hesitation.
I'll get him, Wayne.
Galton's face disappeared once more, and Paul closed his eyes, concentrating. Another long minute passed before John and Rachel saw his face tense, and he seemed strained for a long moment. Then he sighed and opened his eyes. Simultaneously, Rachel felt a sinking feeling in the pit of her stomach and a sensation of eyes staring at her from behind. It was so strong that she reflexively turned her head to see who or what was behind her. Whatever it was, it absolutely hated her. Chills ran up and down her spine, and she hunched forward, hugging her arms around herself. It wasn't long before Galton returned once more to stare into the screen, his skin now gone pale. He didn't even have to ask the question that consumed him. It was so plainly written across his face. Paul just nodded to him, then added,
We have to go pick him up, but he's here.
Galton's expression went slack with relief. Then he changed the subject.
I'll take as many of them with me as I can, Paul. And I'll get that deconstructor. I swear it on my life.
Paul nodded once more.
Godspeed, Wayne Galton.
Galton returned his nod.
Take care of him.
Then his face disappeared and the screen went blank. Rachel shivered again. The sensation of a hostile, completely evil gaze staring at her back hadn't gone away. Paul immediately started Hope moving toward her new passenger. Stranded in a spacesuit in the vastness of the emptiness at a location only Paul could properly pinpoint, Rachel rubbed her neck and looked around once more. No one had or could join them in the command center. They were the only people aboard Hope One. But she would have sworn there was someone staring at her. Maybe in preparation for plunging a knife into her back. She looked over at John, who met her eye and just nodded. He felt it too. Daddy? Rachel began giving voice to both of their concerns. Paul looked over at her and gave his head a single, firm shake. No. She cut off mid-thought, her mouth hanging open for a long moment. The gaze on her back making her feel anxious. For once, she didn't resent his command to be silent, probably because the eerie strangeness of that evil presence left her so alarmed. Paul's own gaze was sharp but level, and she just nodded back. It took two truly awful hours for them to find the lone spacesuit, floating in the void. Paul never relaxed, and he carefully began to guide the suit in as their autopilot matched trajectory with the drifting form, then approached slowly enough to avoid triggering the particle collision field that guarded the ship against micrometeors. Still, they waited in silence, all three using senses enhanced with Energemetrix 6 to watch the precious cargo approach. When finally their trajectory matched perfectly and the retin drive cut out, Paul said simply,
Wait here, Rach. Watch the controls.
Then, motioning for John to follow him, he pushed himself out of his chair and floated toward the hatch leading toward the airlock at the ship's base. Rachel continued to keep her own invisible eyes on their new passenger. Through the hull of Hope, as Paul and John pulled him into the airlock and proceeded to strip his suit from him. As she watched, Rachel used her console to lay in a new course, taking them back toward Ataria and hopefully safety. Because the others were moving in free fall, she didn't dare start the autopilot, even if she desperately wanted to. The hostile presence still hadn't abated, and she could barely contain her impatience as she watched all three of the others slowly approaching through the passageways of the gravity-deprived ship. When the three finally reached the command center, she was practically ready to jump out of her skin. Paul immediately went to his customary console and strapped himself in, then looked over the autopilot program Rachel had already laid in. He hissed an alarm and immediately set to work changing it. Her protest died on her lips at another sharp glance, and she settled mutely in to wait. John, meanwhile, was strapping Taryn into a console, then immediately returned to his own. Rachel noticed that he took the precaution of disabling Taryn's console almost immediately. The boy himself barely seemed to know where he was. He wasn't crying or complaining, though. If anything, he was in shock. John noticed her curious glance and shrugged.
I sedated him a bit. He was not doing well.
Rachel nodded, continuing to study the boy's face. He shared the Asian cast of his mother's features, and his wide, staring eyes might almost have matched his mother's dead ones. Rachel shivered again, for entirely different reasons than before, and set to work scanning their surroundings. Doing something beat doing nothing, with the invisible eyes never wavering from directly behind her. After what felt like an age, they finally began to move. Rachel registered automatically that their speed was significantly higher than she would normally have expected. Good. Their direction, however, was at a significant tangent to the course they would have had to follow in order to return to Ataria. Rachel stole a glance at her father, then intentionally slowed her racing thoughts enough to figure out why he'd done it. It was obvious, really. If whatever was watching them, the Watcher, as Wayne Galton had called it, followed them back to the colony, that was a very bad thing. Even with their greater-than-usual speed, it took well over an hour for the strange sense of eyes on their backs to begin to abate. Rachel finally fell asleep when the sensation diminished enough to allow it. Her dreams were dark enough to make her wish she hadn't slept at all. Ever since they reached the Aurora Galaxy, Rachel had dreams of Earth that she rarely remembered fully and didn't wish to remember at all. It was an Earth torn by war and destruction, a dark place where monsters walked the world and people were treated like animals. These dreams were far worse. Earth became Ataria. The monsters hunted her friends, those few she still called friends in some way. And freedom was lost to humanity even here. Eventually the dreams faded, leaving her in a troubled doze. She awoke an indeterminate time later, with her mouth tasting foul and her eyes burning. Across from her, next to John, Taryn was apparently waking up as well. She looked over to where her father still sat in his chair, stoic and determined, though the grimness in his eyes had diminished. Most obviously of all, nothing remained of the strange sense of being watched. Her relief was instant, and she allowed herself to bask in it for a few moments as she awakened fully. Then Taryn spoke aloud for the first time.
"Who are you?"
He was looking directly at Rachel rather than John, and she smiled tentatively in return. "I'm Rachel."
"I'm Taryn."
"I've always wanted a little brother, Taryn." Rachel met his gaze levelly. She didn't smile. This boy had been through too much. She could see it in his eyes. He didn't need someone to jolly him along. He needed someone to take him seriously. Taryn looked sad.
I've never had a sister.
He looked at John.
Or a brother.
He didn't look at Paul at all, and Rachel could see the pain behind the boy's eyes. She simply nodded in return. It was then, with Taryn Galton staring at her, that the full emotional impact of what had happened actually came home to her. This poor little boy would never have his mother or father ever again. His situation was just like hers, given time. He would feel just like she had been feeling for a very long time, but far worse. After all, she still had her daddy, and he was a good man, the best. In that moment, Rachel's resentment melted away, and the next thing she knew, she had unbuckled from her console and was all the way across the command center with her arms wrapped around her dad. She hugged him as tight as she could with her 13-year-old muscles that refused to mature and absolutely bawled her heart out. Belatedly, it occurred to her that something most definitely had found them, and it was because of her idea to bring the boy she had never met aboard. It was her fault. She didn't care. Taryn was worth it. When her tears finally abated, it was to the sound of Taryn's voice addressing John in a befuddled tone.
Girls are weird.
John's resulting laughter was mischievous and free, and as her dad began to chuckle, Rachel gave John the stink eye. Gee, thanks, she grumbled. It was a lame retort, but she just wasn't feeling very snarky at the moment.
And that's great. And that concludes our reading of From the Void. And thank you, everybody, for being here. Thank you, Oldest. Thank you, Fourth. And thank you, Mel. And good job to everybody. Y'all did great. And you know what? That is the second story in the book, From the Void.
The Energemetra 6 podcast is made possible by North Arrow Coffee. North Arrow Coffee is the pro-life coffee company where 15% of every purchase goes to support organizations like Crisis Pregnancy Centers, whose purpose is to support women in the most difficult situation of their lives. If you're interested, head over to northarrowcoffee.co and use promo code E6 to get 10% off with your order.
The advertisements featured did not necessarily represent my endorsements or views.
Next week, we will be going over the third story, and we have our adult Taryn Galton voice coming to read that one. Thank you, everybody. I guess, unless you've got anything else, Mel, I guess that's it for the week. I do have actually one other thing.
Okay.
We still need a voice for Tom Neelian, the boy from the darkness. He is coming up in about 2 weeks, and I want someone who can narrate his two stories and then who will be willing to show up for a quick appearance during the next book. So if we have any listeners who'd be willing to do that, reach out to me, Jared at e6universe.com, and we'll catch y'all next time.